it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello, Sunshine. I'm Alexi Lalas, and welcome to the State of the Union podcast, where we look at the beautiful game on and off the field through the lens of red, white, and blue colored glasses. This is a special live pod coming to you in the day after of USA versus Jamaica, the semifinal of the Nations League, a game that ultimately saw the U.S. men's national team win 3-1. Probably should use quotes when it comes to win in terms of how much of a win it actually was. But ultimately, the U.S. goes on, finds themselves in yet another Nations League final where they will face Mexico. But before we get to that, I want to introduce my friend, my colleague, my guiding light, a soccer savant, a Fox soccer researcher and writer extraordinaire. Mossy, how are you doing on this Friday, March 22nd in the year 2024?
I'm doing well. It's good to have you back in LA. I know you were in Arlington, Texas, and attended last night's match.
I was. I just got off the plane, and we had a wonderful time in Dallas. I know that I had sent some pictures to you. We'll probably talk about this on the show next week a little bit, but I got to do a little bit of sightseeing in that I've been to Dallas so many times, and it's a fun city, and it's a unique city, but I never was able to actually go down to Daley Plaza there and, you know, the historical significance. And I know you got a kick out of it because you love history and everything like that. And it was amazing. The sixth floor museum that they have at the book depository, nothing has changed. They've kept it as true as possible, obviously with some, updates here or there, but it's an amazing experience to see that. Obviously, an incredibly dark day for our country, but also an incredibly important historic day. And you learn a whole lot about that day. You learn about the lead up, and obviously the post to the assassination. And you know, there's the grassy knoll, and they have the wood picket fence and everything. And obviously, you on the sixth floor, you go up, you see the exact vantage point. And I was left with, if I ever had any conspiratorial type of feelings relative to this, they weren't dashed, but they were allayed a little bit in that it's a lot closer than it has ever looked when I watch it on movies or documentaries in terms of the shot. So that's what I was left with when I was up there in that corner looking down.
Mark Lane, who was this famous JFK assassination conspiracy theorist, he used to always say that the museum at the sixth floor book depository was the only museum devoted to a place where nothing happened, because he was convinced that Oswald wasn't even one of the shooters. So he always mocked the notion that they built a museum there. But I will say, in honor of you having visited Dealey Plaza, at some point during this spaces, I am going to Zapruder film that last play in regulation last night, because I picked up on some very interesting things.
Okay, good. Well, let's get right to it, right? Don't bore us. Get to the chorus. And we appreciate everybody that's tuned in live here. We appreciate if you are listening. This will show up in your feed. And like I said, it is in the cold, harsh light of day after that game. I'm assuming that you agree with me. That was a poor performance from the United States. And that was it was a performance that angered me. I was at the game, like you said, with Rob Stone and Carly Lloyd and Stu Holden. We were doing some promotion over what we're going to do this summer at Fox with Copa America and the Euros and everything. And you could just, it was palpable how frustrated we were watching and watching this team, and how maddening it was in terms of a overall lack of urgency and ruthlessness and energy. And so when there's a game like this, obviously we're looking to assign blame. Well, there's plenty of blame to go around. But I think first and foremost, it starts with Greg Berhalter. And the fact that this team showed up like this is a reflection and a poor reflection on Greg Berhalter. Is it all his responsibility? No, ultimately the ball is kicked by the players on the field. But if you look, Mossy, through this team, Very little was created in terms of attack. So much back passing and, as I said, just a real lack of urgency there. And if I go through this lineup, Matt Turner, I don't think he could have done anything on the goal. And obviously you put yourself behind in the first couple of minutes. It's certainly not the way they drew it up, but it certainly can happen. But I don't think he could have done anything on the goal. There were those that said we should have, or Matt Turner should have saved that. But I don't think so. I think that's a point blank shot. And I'm not blaming Matt Turner in that instance. Joe Scally's not good enough. Chris Richards is not good enough. Miles and Anthony were fine, although Jedi was a little, how do I say this? He wasn't as constant and I guess as dependable as we have seen him in the past. And you know, he's prone to lapses just like anybody else. I thought Yunus Musah actually had a poor game relative to what Yunus Musah is expected to do. Weston was interesting in terms of the change in him going out to the right back position. And he didn't have his usual impact on a game that he maybe wanted to have. Malik Tillman was forgettable. To me, Weah could not find positionally where he actually wanted to show up on the field. And when he did find some room and actually was able to take players on, I thought he was at his best, but it was very, very few and far between those moments. Balogun, I know he's the incumbent, but he was out of sight, out of mind, did very, very little. Christian Pulisic, I actually thought, had a decent game in that there were times in the past where Christian Pulisic would have faded out of this game and would have, his head would have gone down and you wouldn't have heard from him. And he, in a strange way, forced the issue time and time again. And look, he had three or four guys around him. So that's from the on-field perspective. And as I said, Greg Berhalter deserves and is, I think, fairly being criticized for this overall performance. But he also deserves credit for making the changes that ultimately resulted in a win in a knockout type of scenario and a tournament setting, albeit against a team that you should beat. But this is a Jamaica team that got a gift handed to them by the U.S. in the first couple of minutes and immediately went back into a bunker, into, you know, parking the bus, low block, whatever you want to call it. And even the best teams in the world struggle to be able to break down a team that is basically defending for the rest of the game. All right, those are initial thoughts. Master, are you still with me?
I am, yes. Okay. I think it's always dangerous in these two-game windows to drop lots of takes after the first game. The U.S. could go out on Sunday, play great, beat Mexico 3-0. Some of the players that struggled against Jamaica could play well, and we could be having a very different conversation on Monday morning when we tape our next pod. However, I've been banging on about the fact that Berhalter 2.0 feels flat and stale to me. And last night's game certainly did nothing to dissuade that. I thought it was a very poor performance, lethargic. That was as close to losing a game without losing it as you can come. And like I said, I'm going to break down that last sequence in regulation. But overall, agree with your thoughts. Another disappointing performance. And listen, on Sunday, you're playing Mexico for a trophy. If that doesn't get this team going, and if we don't see a really energetic performance then, that's going to mean we have a real issue on our hands.
Yeah, listen, we wanted to do this live spaces to get people to give us their opinion. So we're giving ours right here, and I'm going to turn it over to the folks that have shown up here. If you do want to say something, look, you can just listen, but if you want to participate, that's great too. You just press that button, that little blue light shows up, and it lets me know that you want to speak. I'll bring you in. I do it one at a time. This isn't a festival type of situation, Lollapalooza type of thing, in that my little brain can only handle so many voices. So just one at a time. Hopefully you have something interesting to say. Hopefully you say it in an efficient way. Don't bore us. Get to the chorus and let us know what your thoughts are on this or anything else that you want to talk about out there. But obviously, front of mind right now is this. And to Mossy's point, and Mossy, you would agree that people using this as a canary in the coal mine type of thing, or as, hey, this should signal the problems that I know you're feeling and that many others are feeling. And maybe this type of performance for a lot of people is justifying the feelings that they have relative to the Greg Berhalter coaching this team.
Yeah, but let me address that for a second. People, they always project their feelings of Greg Berhalter onto Matt Crocker. And if you're somebody that thinks that Greg Berhalter needs to be removed right now, it's probably because you don't think he should have been rehired in the first place. So you're viewing it through that lens. You have a much lower threshold than Matt Crocker probably does for feeling like, this has got to be it. Let's pull the plug on this now. You have to, if you want to have a realistic conversation about what needs to happen between now and the 2026 World Cup for Greg Berhalter to not be coaching the team at that tournament, you have to put yourself in the mind of somebody who did rehire Greg Berhalter, who clearly has a higher opinion of him than you do, who clearly likes the work he did in the previous 4 years. And so what does that person need to see to be convinced that you need to pull the plug on Greg Berhalter and bring in a different coach? So if you want to have a serious conversation about it, you have to transport yourself into Matt Crocker's mind. For people who never thought he should have been rehired in the first place, to be talking about how, you know, a disappointing win over Jamaica in a Nations League semifinal, come on, isn't that the moment that shows everybody that he needs to be gone? I mean, that's just not realistic.
Yeah, I posted on X early today a lot of the things that you were talking about relative to Matt Crocker. For people that don't know, Matt Crocker is the sporting director. And what basically his first order of business, and I think the biggest decision that he has made in his capacity and his short term with the United States Soccer Federation was to, like you said, hire a men's coach, and in this case, rehire Greg Berhalter. And he had every opportunity, and nobody would have said anything had he gone in a different direction. And yet, after this exhaustive type of, and I'm using it with quotes because I know a lot of people don't feel that it was exhaustive, search, he still came to the conclusion that for him going forward and relative to 26, because he mentioned 26 in everything that he said in the announcement, how this is the person that's leading us to 26, that Greg Berhalter was still the best candidate. Now, can that change? Yes. But in doing so, Matt Crocker has to, in doing it, basically admit that he made a major mistake. Nobody likes to do that. And there are people out there, I'm sure, that would say, yeah, but that's the mark of a leader, is saying when you make a mistake, all right, I made a mistake, and then you go fix it. But I don't think that Matt Crocker looks at this as a mistake. And I don't think that the game yesterday is going to necessarily change his mind. If the U.S. were to really, really bomb out in the Copa America and there were real, real problems that you saw in their performance, then certainly I think it would be warranted and fair. And I think Matt Crocker would look at it. But I do think that Matt Crocker thinks of this as a long-term type of project. And as I said before, if he had hired anybody else, nobody would have said anything. It would have been, yeah, all right, whatever. There was all the problems. And it's still a second cycle. And we talk about second cycles. But he went back to the well. And this is on him. And so I think he's going to give Greg Berhalter every benefit of the doubt, a very, very long leash. All right, listen, we've talked a whole lot about what we saw. And there's a bunch of things. I know, Mossy, before we get to the calls, did you want to focus on that goal, or you want to say that for later?
No, I'll do it now. A couple things. As soon as the clock hit 90, Dre Cordero said, we're going to play 4 minutes of stoppage time. And Paramount Plus, they threw up plus four on the screen. And then they immediately took it down. And 3 seconds later, they threw up plus five. And then Jamaica was evidently upset about the amount of stoppage time that was played. And Dre Cordero, he brought Christina Uncle on and asked her about the stoppage time. And she made a big point of saying, well, there was this Bobby Reed sub during the stoppage time, and he took his sweet time getting off the field. And that's why it went from four to five. And that had nothing to do with it. The Bobby Reed sub had occurred when it already said plus five. Clearly, it was either Dre Cordero misspeaking or the Red Hat misspeaking when he conveyed that information to Dre Cordero, or maybe even the referee throwing up four, but immediately changing his mind and saying, actually, it's five. But it was never actually four. It was always five. So people need to understand that. And then on the five, I mean, I said that was as close as you can come to losing a game without losing it. Blake had the ball in his hands at 94-50. And when he hoofed it up the field, if he had kicked it towards the sidelines and had it go out of bounds for a throw-in, the game would have been over, because by the time the U.S. threw it in and gathered themselves and went up the field again, the referee would have blown the whistle. The sequence of events that needed to happen there for Jamaica to concede a goal was incredible to me. Blake kicked this line drive, then went straight to Tyler Adams, who headed it forward. And then Chris Richards, who had gone up the field, was able to step in front of a Jamaica player who should have gotten to it first. And he headed it across to Pepe, who headed it quickly to Reyna, who one time dinked it over to Haji Wright. And next thing you know, in a span of 5 seconds, we went from the ball being launched to one side of the field to the U.S. attacking down the other end. And then the referee had to see how that attack was going to play out. And then there was some controversy here, because when Haji Wright squared it across to Pepe, I went back and looked at it again this morning. It did look to me like Pepe was a half a step offsides in the box. All the Jamaica defenders players threw their hands up. They couldn't believe the flag didn't go up, but the referee didn't call it. It goes out for a corner. As we've discussed recently on the pod, referees do not like to end the game on a corner. Ooh. So they let him take the last corner and the U.S. scored. So the U.S. did get a bit of an officiating break there.
Couple of things. All right. If you have to pick a moment that is the most benign against the United States, it would probably be corner kicks, given Christian Pulisic's inability, it seems, to hit anybody. And the irony is that's ultimately how they score. But that we are horrible on corner kicks.
And to be fair, Jamaica caught a break officiating wise in the first half. There was a play where Tillman poked the ball away from Palmer and it set the U.S. on a counter, and mm-hmm. Balogun slipped it across to Pulisic in the box, and he should have won time, but he took an extra touch. But nevertheless, when he shot it, Lati Baudere deflected, and then the ball popped up, and Lati Baudere, it was an accident, but still, he clearly smacked it with his arm out of bounds. That should have been a penalty in my view. So the U.S. did get a bad call there, so you could argue it evened out at the end with the non-offsides on Pepe.
So I'm confused, Mossy. Are you wearing tinfoil or not? You know, I was with the CONCACAF people last couple of days. I saw Victor Montaliani. Obviously, they were all smiles in terms of getting a final that they want right now. But you know, in a game like that, come on.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, I think there should have been an offside on Pepe, but more of what I wanted to convey was just how much Jamaica screwed up that sequence. Yep. There is no way you're leading a game at 94-50, the ball is in your goalkeeper's hands, and the referee has indicated 5 minutes of stoppage time. There's just no way you can concede a goal in that situation. Your keeper has to know to kick it somewhere on the field where nobody is at, and it's going to take a few seconds for their team to gather it and go back up the field, and then the referee is going to blow the whistle. It was unbelievable how Blake managed to kick it in the one spot where it went straight to the head of a U.S. player. And like I said, there was a sequence of headers where Jamaica players were slow to the ball, and the U.S. kept heading it forward, and then nice pass by Gio Reyna, and next thing you know, what happened. It was just unbelievable that Jamaica screwed that up.
There might be some people on the spaces here that didn't watch the game. You didn't miss anything in terms of beautiful soccer or anything that is going to fill you with optimism going forward for this team. The environment, and I was there, it was not a great crowd, and certainly for the U.S. game, it was a doubleheader. Obviously, Mexico played after, and the crowd was much bigger then, but it was sterile, it was quiet, it was not conducive to to playing a big game like that. And it was ultimately disappointing. The American Outlaws did their best and they were wonderful. We saw them before the game and then went into the stadium, but it did not feel big. That's not an excuse by any stretch of the imagination. And by the way, if you're an American soccer player, men's or women's, over the years, you've gotten used to being in situations like that where you have to manufacture and create your own excitement and energy, but this team was not able to do it. All right, let's get to some people here that want to join in. And like I said, if you do hit that button, that little blue light shows up and I will bring you in as I'm about to do here with Jeremy. Let's see what Jeremy has to say about this or maybe something else. Jeremy, unmute yourself or forever hold your peace. Yes, there you go.
All right, hey, can you hear me?
I got you. What's going on?
Cool. So not that I ever want the U.S. men's team to lose.
Yes.
But do you wish we would have lost that game?
Ah, here we go. This is an evergreen type of feeling. And it is a human type of reaction. And it is something that you should not apologize for, but you should definitely be honest and admit. And too many people, when I ask them that question, do they want this team to lose? Will say, oh, no, I want the team to win, even though I hate this coach. Well, in order for a change to happen, if you don't like Greg Berhalter, we'll use Greg Berhalter in this example. If you don't like Greg Berhalter, and Mossy laid out why a lot of people don't like it, and some it started in the first day and it's never going to go away no matter what he does, good or bad, then the only way that you are going to get what you want, which is a change of coach, is by the team failing. And therefore, you have to want this team to fail. It's okay. Like I said, it's normal. It happens in all sports. It happens in human beings. It's a natural type of reaction with a competitor out there. So somebody, who was it yesterday? I don't know. Can remember, somebody texted me or I was talking to someone. They said that goal going in that Mossy was talking about, did that actually hurt the U.S. men's national team program? Because, you know, this gives Greg Berhalter, not that I don't think he was going to be fired if they had lost that game. I really don't. I think it all is dependent really on Copa America, and maybe even not Copa America. We talked about Matt Crocker here, but yeah, I didn't want this team to lose to satisfy any desire that I have, because I don't have that desire to make a change. But I've been there before. So I don't know. Did you want this team, Jeremy, to lose last night in order to get the change that you or somebody else wants?
No, not at all. I mean, I wanted them to win, and I wanted them to win handedly. But as you get into the waning minutes of the game, you know, Jamaica was the better side. And Jamaica came in and played really, really well without a lot of their key players. And it was really disappointing to see the men's team play so poorly. And so much of the conversation now this morning, and even, you know, last night after the game and the celebration of the win, is about the American grit and the ability to come back and adversity and all this. You know, heard it before, but I just feel like that's taken up so much of the conversation because we actually put a win up on the board rather than the 90 core minutes of the game and how poorly that we played.
Okay, hold on. Oh, you said, do you really think that that Jamaica was the better team?
Last night, yeah.
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think they did well. They were first.
I didn't say they didn't do well. I mean, they didn't say they did well. And to your point, they were missing players, so they can be better. But yeah. You know, they got the goal. It's not something that they drew up. They just took it, and they took it well, and they deserve credit for doing that. And they rode that for the rest of the game. And yes, they had a couple of opportunities and some real good opportunities. And, you know, the breakaway and some different offside types of things that had they gone the other way could have been problematic. But on the whole, when you look at the possession, now the possession is one thing, but I fully admit that it did not lead to things. But I don't think coming out of that game, if you were a coach and you said you get to coach either one of these teams, I don't think any coach is going to say, yeah, I'd rather coach Jamaica, because they were in a shell for the entire game and they were very, very good. And they bend, but they almost didn't break until the end, like Mossy was talking about here. But I don't think that they were better than the team. Mossy, what do you think?
It's always difficult to analyze a game in which the underdog scored 30 seconds in, because to your point, that's going to put them in even more of a defensive shell. The onus for the entire game was on the U.S. to score. So we'll never know how this game would have played out if it had stayed 0-0 a little bit longer. Would Jamaica have been more ambitious than they were? Or was this always going to be their game plan? And just as an added bonus, they even got a goal in the first minute, so they got to protect a 1-0 instead of a 0-0. But I don't think Jamaica was the better team. But if we're grading them on a curve, given the fact that they were missing all these players, they've executed what they set out to execute better than the U.S., I guess, might be the better way to put it.
Jeremy, well, while you don't want them to lose, them being the U.S. team, what do you want to see? What changes do you want to see? Is it a personnel thing? Is it a tactical type of thing? Is it just, the Supreme Court obscenity? I can't tell you what it is, but I know when I see it type of thing. Or what are you looking for from this team?
I'm just looking for more energy and heart.
Yeah,
I think we come out and it seems slow. It seems like we don't have an identity. We don't have a sense of who we are. And it seems to be a collection of individuals that bring with them immense talent.
Sure.
But it doesn't seem there's a collective style of play that we have, that we've formed around. And I'm hoping... I was hoping that I'd begin to see that transpire under 2.0. And it's frustrating to see it not come to bear. Mm-hmm. But I look forward to what will happen with Mexico on Sunday.
All right. Let's have good thoughts for Sunday. And I thank you, Jeremy, for jumping on the state here. Okay. That's a good one. Yeah. All right. I don't think that Jeremy is alone. And, you know, he mentioned kind of the spectrum of fan out there. And Mossy, you hit on it a little bit. And there's, I guess, the never Greg camp. And no matter what happens, they're never going to change. And many of those people certainly would have been watching this game saying, you know, what's best for this program is if they ultimately lose this. And they will look at this as that Greg got bailed out by nothing that he did, but just by the soccer gods conspiring and giving him this gift.
I guess my point is it's hard for me to imagine somebody who was okay with Greg Berhalter being rehired and now thinks he should be fired. If you're somebody that woke up this morning thinking he should be fired, it's because you never thought he should have been rehired in the first place. So that's not really applicable to Matt Crocker, because Matt Crocker rehired him. So
yeah.
You have to try to put yourself in the mind of somebody who chose to rehire him. Have we seen enough negative so far in Berhalter 2.0 to justify him being fired? And I would say no.
All right. Let's go over here and see what Chad has to say about this or some other situation. Chad, you're on the State of the Union here. Let's see. Unmute yourself and give us your pearls of wisdom. Unmute. Going once. Going twice. I still see you muted. Oh, wait. There you go. Hey, what's up?
Hey. So I want you to educate me a little bit.
I'll do my best.
You understand this. Soccer is such a unique sport in that we bring these players in for a few days, mm-hmm. and they're all over the globe. They're playing for their clubs. Their clubs tend to be what drives them. And then we ask them to come in, practice together for a few days, and expect, you know, greatness every single time. And I know a lot of these guys have played together ever since youth. I get that. But it's just a lot of them play different styles for their clubs. They come in, they're asking to, especially in these short camps. I just think in these short camps, it makes it very difficult. I'm not excusing it. I mean,
No, but I mean, look, this is obviously it's the nature of the beast. However, I think in a certain way, you're letting, in particular, Greg Berhalter off the hook in this situation. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the fact that this is a second cycle. So yeah. He is not new to the job, and he's certainly not new to this group. As a matter of fact, he's the one that cultivated and fostered this group that now he gets to reap the benefits of. And so if anybody had time, or I guess more time, there's some coaches that come in and either they get fired or they don't, or the team is constantly changing and they have to figure it out. So, you know, the previous caller who was talking about an identity, sometimes it's difficult to establish an identity for an international team. So, you know, again, I understand, but I think that there are a lot of people that watched this game last night and said, you know what, this team, given the talent that you mentioned from top to bottom, the depth that we have, and it's not just the places that they're playing. It's the obvious talent that is there. And the fact that this talent has been together, and you could even say has grown up together within that, not system, but within that culture, that if anybody should have much better concept of what's going on and the partnerships and the coordinations, and not just the understanding, but the buy-in of what they should be doing, it's this group in particular. And I'm not saying it's easy. And I know a lot of people, and I think even Greg in his post-game conference said that they, you know, they looked rusty. Okay, you can look rusty, but that doesn't mean that you completely forget about what got you there. And, you know, so some of the changes, we haven't even really talked about the changes yet, Mossy, but some of the changes, you know, they fundamentally changed the game. And listen, I've over the years, I have said, for those that have listened or watched, form is fallacy. And if you need an example of that, maybe if you need both sides of that example, you can look at Gio Reyna and the way that he made a difference coming in. This is a guy who's obviously not playing and struggling. And even Greg Berhalter took a shot at him at Jesse Marsh after the game for questioning why he would bring him in. And I actually like that about Greg Berhalter. We don't see enough of that type of character. I kind of want him to be a little bit more feisty and prickly, if you will. But, you know, there are some very, very talented players right now that have grown up in the Greg Berhalter system, for better or worse, but there is a system and they have been together for a while. Mossy?
Although it was interesting that Greg Berhalter did not start Gio Reyna. He went with Malik Tillman instead, which meant, to me, he did give some credence to their club situations, because that's the only explanation. We all think Gio Reyna, all things being equal, is a better player than Malik Tillman. And then he brings him in and Gio does what he does, two lovely assists to Haji Wright. So do you think that exposes that it was a mistake to not start him in the first place, that Greg Berhalter needs to not worry about his club inactivity and recognize that he's one of the U.S.'s best players and he always needs to be on the field?
I think that there was, as there would be, even though I can say form is fallacy, I get why coaches will be a little reticent to start a player, even though they believe in him, obviously believe in him because he's bringing him into camp, but to start a player that is, you know, barely played any games.
It was interesting though. At halftime, I thought for sure it was going to be a like for like. Tillman was mm-hmm. going to come out, Gio was going to come in, but Greg Berhalter was evidently so unhappy with what he saw from Joe Scally in the first half, and Scally was poor, as you mentioned, that he decided to bring on Gio for Scally and move Weston McKennie to right back, which a lot of people thought was robbing Peter to pay Paul because you lose McKennie in the midfield. I know Stu Holden was posting about that on X this morning. He said he never wants to see that again. Did you think that was ridiculous given the form McKennie is in and what he brings from that midfield position, his box-to-box abilities, to waste him at right back?
I guess, but I mean, I think he was trying to get as many good players on the field as possible and just kind of give them positions, especially in a game like that, Mossy. You're a right back, but you have, I mean, it was a point where they had 80% possession, right? So you're really not playing right back in a traditional type of sense where you're going back and forth. And it should be noted that when we talk about this national team and we talk about them progressing and evolving, it's all in the context of beating and competing on a consistent basis with the elites of the world, something that we haven't been able to do. Yes, we have one-off games here or there, but consistently being able to compete with the elites of the world. When the U.S. team, when this version of this U.S. team comes up against the elites of the world, they're not going to come up against this type of situation where a team is bunkering in and just absorbing pressure that you have to break down. And there are very, very good teams in the world with incredible players that a lot of people would say are much better than the United States that take time, patience, and at times struggle. And we've all been in and watched those games where they've bent and they didn't break. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating for a player. I'm sure it's frustrating for a coach. And it's frustrating for fans to watch it because on the surface, it looks so easy. And yet this is the beauty of this game where you can have 11 players who from a talent perspective aren't as good as the other 11 and that they can still find a way to frustrate you and ultimately get a point, even win the game going forward. And we see it time and time again over the years. It's a historic part of the game. It frustrates people, but it's the reality of the game.
So that was the sub at halftime, Gio Frascalli. He then made a triple sub mid-second half. He brought on Adams for Musa and then Pepe and Haji Wright for Balogun and Timmy Weah. Let's get to those. Haji Wright, it's unclear to what degree is he in the center forward mix or the winger mix. He's kind of a hybrid between those two, but I didn't think it was a great night for either Balogun or Pepe. And then Haji Wright steps up and scores two goals. So did he score a lot of points with you for that or not really?
No, it doesn't change the way I view about Haji Wright. I like that he came in and as a substitute, not just changed the game, but did the most important thing as somebody coming in whose job it is to put the ball on the net, did it twice. That was great. I thought his first goal was really good in the way he almost adjusted in real time because he thought about going right and then just kind of used the momentum to let the ball roll and then use that speed. His second goal was a bad touch and he made lemonade out of lemons by turning around and finishing it. But I don't care how it goes into the net and I don't care who scores it. But I don't suddenly look at Haji Wright as the answer to all of our problems up top. And you and I over on the pod many episodes, we've talked about how that train has left the station and it had left the station until Josh Sargent got hurt. And again, this goes back to some of the depth and some of the options that they have. But again, I don't want to be blinded by what Haji Wright is. I don't think that suddenly we have a completely different Haji Wright on our hands.
And then Tyler Adams, it was somewhat surprising to see him come on before Johnny, but we then found out that Johnny had picked up some sort of knock with Betis as well. So he might have been on a limits restriction as well. So Greg Berhalter chose to bring Tyler Adams in and then subbed him off in extra time for Johnny Cardoza, which Tyler Adams was not happy about. But it was great to see him back on the field for the U.S. You could see the energy, the leadership that he brings.
He fundamentally changes the way that this team plays, both from a X's and O's and passing perspective, but also from a leadership perspective. And, you know, the whole little thing when he came off the field and they got into it and he went off and sulked. All right, whatever. I mean, Tyler's a big boy. He should understand by now what the situation is going for. And I get no player wants to come off the field and he's a competitor and he's finally back and playing. I'm just glad that he didn't break. I'm glad that not only did he hold up physically in this situation, but he showed, even in what we know is still not 100%, that he can come in and he can be a boss for that team. And so let's knock on wood that he gets better and better and better, but it was a wonderful thing to see. And he did. He changed the game and the way you could see a change in the way that the team played and the way that the team felt. I thought that when Weston McKennie did go out to that right-hand side, because everybody, you know, talks about reading body language and stuff like that. There were a lot of people that I was talking to said, "Oh, he doesn't look happy. It's not a good look." And you know, he's out there out of sight, out of mind over there on that right-hand side. I think Weston McKennie is going to be fine regardless of where he is on the field. He's going to find ways to play. Does he want to play right back? No, but be thankful that you were kept on the field. I think it's a tribute to how important Greg Berhalter feels he is that he's willing to even say, you know what, in this situation, we're going to put you out there on the right. Well, what else, Mossy, when it comes to this game or comes to this team now, because we move on to the final against Mexico and, you know, our old friends back up again.
Well, I just want to say I agree with you on the Jamaica goal. People went into this game with this narrative in their heads that Matt Turner's inactivity at club level was going to make him rusty. And so they tried to find some fault on that goal. I don't think there was one. That was a point blank header that if he had made the save, it would have been a miraculous save. So I don't think that was a goal where you fault him even in the slightest. I will say, though, there were some nervy moments between Turner and the two center backs in a game where they didn't have a lot to do. Jamaica were just kind of hoofing the ball up the field, but there were some situations where they were slow to react. There was one in the second half around the 60th minute, which was unbelievable. Chris Richards went to sleep. It was Sefars that stepped in front of him and had a breakaway. That could have been game over right there, 2-0. It was incredible.
I mean, Chris Richards, I don't know if he thinks that he's much better than he actually is or much faster than he actually is, but it was like he was running around with a smoke and a coffee out there. I mean, it's very strange. Again, I'm still not sold. There's several of these players here that I'm just not sold on yet. Chris Richards is one, and I think I can be sold at some point, but each time that I see it's like, it's just not quite there yet. Joe Scally, again, I just don't think that he is of that level. And again, Serginho Dest will be back, and that changes the complexion of this team. But again, against Mexico, Mexico's not just going to sit back and relax. Going back to Greg Berhalter, you know, this isn't about defending Greg Berhalter. This is kind of defending all coaches here. All coaches can only take a certain amount of players. And so that Haji Wright was, you know, set to go on vacation with his family and was called in. You know, first off, that says a lot about the depth that they have. It also says a lot about Greg Berhalter. And just because he wasn't going to bring Haji Wright in, okay, doesn't mean that now that he brought him in and he scored goals, that it was the wrong decision. Because Josh Sargent could have been on that field and done the exact same thing. Just be happy that Greg Berhalter in this moment knew what he had at his disposal and said, yeah, I'm going to bring him in. And that he had fostered a relationship where there wasn't any resentment. There wasn't any, screw him. I'm just going to go on vacation, whatever. I'm done. He got on that plane. He came in and obviously did the job.
Although supposedly when Greg Berhalter called him, he said, I need a few minutes to think about it. It was like a Lou Brown, Major League Cleveland Indians, when he gets called about the Indians job. And hold on, I got somebody I did a line about some tires here. So, you know, how'd you write it? It wasn't like a no-brainer. He has to think about it.
Oh, my goodness.
Because, right, you know, you do have a girlfriend there, and you know this, that has to be a tough conversation. The girlfriend thinks you're about to go on vacation. And then
you come back, you say, you want the good news or the bad news? Well, thankfully he made the choice because, you know, the U.S. is going to a final because of him. All right, let's see what Paul Edwards has to say about this. Let's see, Paul. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. Loyal listener to the pod. Love your guys' analysis. Just two quick thoughts and kind of carry on the Haji discussion. And I'm by no means a Haji loyalist, but it's more about flow. If there's any positive for me, well, there are positives about the game last night, but one of the things I hope is a positive is Greg now in a scenario where he realizes this can go south very quickly and decisions need to be made with nothing but getting results inside. Hopefully that was his attitude before, but I think last night makes it even more obvious. And I just don't know at this point how or what Flo has shown us that merits an automatic start on Sunday. And why would you not give Haji an opportunity saying, hey, he's the guy scoring goals right now. And he is the one that we put in the starting lineup. So one thought there.
Well, you do have to be careful. You do have to be careful because it is a very different proposition coming into a game as a substitute and making an impact as opposed to starting. And as we mentioned before, the game against Mexico is going to be dramatically different in terms of what the U.S. is going to come up against. But I completely agree. I mean, we have kind of anointed Flo, and it's understandable given his pedigree and given our our need and desire, and the reality that that position, that number nine position for this U.S. team, has been open. And so he came in, and that's why I think he's going to be given the benefit of the doubt. He is that incumbent. But when you have somebody coming in and scoring goals, yeah, that's a good thing. It's going to put pressure on him. I didn't think that, you know, Flo could have not scored goals yesterday and still proven that he is the right starter in terms of hold up play, in terms of drawing, drawing fouls, drawing defenders and all that kind of stuff. He can do a whole lot more than just scoring goals. Obviously, goal scorers are judged on putting the ball on the back of the net. And when somebody comes off the bench and scores two goals, yeah, we're going to go crazy. We're going to go crazy about it. But you have to be careful that you don't just get glazed over by these two goals and think, oh, well, obviously Haji Wright has to start now because he is the man in form. And you know what they say about form.
Yep. I hear you. Hey, other point, just a note and a nod to Sergiño Dest and really the impact he has, I think, with Weah. I think not having Dest out there I love what Weah has done for the national team, but I think we could say that while he's had some good moments at club level, you know, he's one of those that probably does more or gets more opportunities as that penciled in starter now at the national team. And I just think we saw the importance of Dest. And if Dest isn't there, if he doesn't have that right back who's pushing up, drawing attention, you know, what I saw from Weah did not look like the same guy that we've seen the last couple of years. So
yeah, he did. Like I said, I didn't think Musa had a particularly good night. I didn't think Weah had a particularly good night. And who knows? Maybe, you know, we're hoping this was an anomaly. Yep. And I had posted at halftime that I wanted to go down there and tear him a new one. I was so angry. And like, I know I get emotional. And actually, if you are a coach, you got to pick and choose your moments when to bring the hairdryer treatment out and all that. But I just looked at this apathy, if you will, on that field, and it was driving me crazy. And look, sometimes it's going to go in one ear out the other, and screaming and yelling is only, you know, going to make things worse. And I don't think Greg Berhalter is necessarily a screamer or a yeller. As a matter of fact, I know he's not. But he certainly, after that half, knew that he had to do things, whether it's saying stuff or it was much more probably in the action and in the changes that he made, that this was not that this was not going well. And this was not going the way, certainly, that they wrote it up. I appreciate it, Paul.
All right. Thank you.
See ya. Mossy, anything before we head out?
Well, on Balogun, listen, like I said, he could go out and score two goals against Mexico on Sunday and completely change the narrative. But overall, there are some early signs that he was slightly oversold. He's a good player. It was a nice pickup. The U.S. center forward depth chart is better for having him there. But I'm not sure he's going to be the transformative figure that we all thought at one point. And, you know, we're doing the England-Brazil game on Saturday. And when he chose the U.S., I made a big point of saying that this was an incredible miss by England, and they got burned by their insularity and this attitude that if it doesn't happen in the Premier League, it doesn't matter. And they missed out on this player who's doing all these great things in Ligue 1. And that take is not aging well, because I don't, the more I see of Balogun, I'm not sure he would have had much of a role to play with England right now. And we'll see in the coming years.
Yeah, I'm not going to cry for England. England's going to be just fine. Okay, let's see here. How about we go over to Knox?
Hey, two things. Musa not having a good night. Were you aware that he was fasting? The commentary at the top of the match said that he only had water.
Yeah.
How do you feel about as a player, as an athlete, and then as a coach, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, I heard about that. And so maybe that's it. maybe it's as simple as that. And if that's the case, I mean, what are you going to say? Yeah, obviously that is going to affect you. There's nothing that you can do necessarily, if you're supportive of not just your teammate, but hopefully somebody that you like and somebody that's your friend. And obviously this is something that's important to them. And you just hope you get through as unscathed as possible. But I mean, this was a different type of Musa. And again, if that's the reason, that's great, because then we can specifically say, well, now we understand what was going on. If this is something bigger or something, I guess, worse in terms of this is the new Musa, because I think there's still, even take out yesterday, there's still a concern that he hasn't progressed and evolved in the way that others have. And when he burst on the scene, it was like, man, this guy is going to, if we extrapolate it out, be something special. And if he hasn't done that or isn't going to do that, if this is as good as it gets, I'm not just talking about last night, but in terms of where Musa has progressed to, is that good enough for everything that we've been hoping? Or have we just kind of talked about what he's going to be and something that he's never actually going to be? Mossy?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much to say about the fasting. It's something that we deal with in all sports, NBA mm-hmm. players and such. And so you have to be respectful, obviously. And so, yeah, it might've hampered his performance, but to your point, we hope that's the case because that's something that's, you know, that's a problem you won't have to deal with down the road in other matches.
Anything else, my friend?
Yes. The crowd size, it's embarrassing. Yeah. It's hard to watch. America is huge. A lot of other countries, you could take a train, you can drive an hour, maybe 2 hours are there. How do we correct this problem? Is it where they're hosting the matches? Is it, you know, getting the word out? Is it the ticket price? Although they're not insane.
It's, I mean, it's a Thursday night in Dallas, and obviously yeah. part of a doubleheader. And it's the night when the NCAA basketball kicks off. So there's a bunch of things that are going
Mexico
on.
Mexico fans, but those made are it excuses. Out, though.
Yeah, still fans were wonderful. Like I said, you know, the Outlaws were out there and they were wonderful. So it's nothing against them. As a matter of fact, they're the ones that actually were out there cheering and doing the best that they possibly can. But it wasn't a good look. It again, it's not conducive to people getting excited and energetic. And that this team was so lacking in energy and so lethargic in their play. I mean, I'm not blaming the circumstances there, but it doesn't help. Now, this falls to CONCACAF in terms of what they are doing. And it's easy for us from the outside to say, well, why didn't you do this? And why didn't you do that? It should be noted also that, when it comes to, you know, Copa America that we have coming this summer and other friends, when it comes to CONCACAF, Masu, help me out here. What are we looking at here in terms of the other games that are happening for those final spots when it comes to Copa America? And then they're happening down the road, by the way, over at FC Dallas' stadium.
Correct. Saturday, Toyota Stadium, Frisco, Texas, Canada, TNT, Honduras, Costa Rica. The winner of Canada, TNT slots into the group with Argentina, Chile, and Peru. The winner of Honduras, Costa Rica slots into a group with Brazil, Colombia, and Paraguay.
Yeah, so, I mean, right down the road there, they're having games, obviously, in a much smaller type of situation. Should be noted that it was raining. It was interesting. We had a discussion because this stadium, the Cowboys Stadium there, for a lot of people, including myself, I thought that's where the final for 26 was going to be. And at the last minute, obviously, it went to New York. But it was raining in Dallas. But this stadium is inside and we were all warm and comfortable inside. And we were talking about the fact that had this been the day of the World Cup final in New York, this would have been New York and everybody would have been getting wet and it would have affected the play on the field. And it certainly wouldn't have been as ideal as you would want it relative to an indoor venue. But it was not good. The field wasn't bad. It looked good. Two games last night and then obviously two games for the third place game in the final on Sunday. But the grass is going to be a whole lot better when it comes to the tournament situations in the summer. Mossy, anything else? Knox, anything else?
No, sir. Thank you.
All right. See ya. All right.
Drake Cordero said that at the end of regulation, by the time the Mexican fans had showed up, they were obviously rooting against the U.S. It had become a downright hostile environment for the U.S. team. I don't know if he oversold that at all. But it certainly doesn't augur well for Sunday. I think the U.S. is going to have to deal with a decidedly pro-Mexico crowd.
Suck it up, Buttercup. I mean, look, I want it packed and I want it pro-U.S., okay? But again, I'm from a generation where, and I know I'm grumpy old man in this thing, but you create your own atmosphere, all right? And a lot of times, either there's no atmosphere or a lot of times, especially when you're playing against someone like Mexico, you are away even at home. And you just get used to it and you figure out how to do it. We thought that we had gone past that, but obviously when it comes to this night and in Dallas, that's not the case. And Sunday night, yeah, it's going to be a predominantly Mexico-focused type of situation.
Very quickly on Mexico, they beat Panama 3-0. Alvarez, Quiñones, and Pineda with the goals. It's so interesting, the different approaches of these two countries right now. In Mexico squad for these two games, 13 of the 23 play in Liga MX, while for the U.S., just 2 of the 23 play in MLS. And half the starters last night from Mexico were Liga MX players, including he went with Henry Martin up top instead of Santi Jimenez, which was interesting. Chucky Lozano also didn't start. Makes me think Jimmy Lozano might be saving those two for the U.S., so they'll be rested. So we'll see. It should be a fun game.
Well, obviously, the problem last night for Greg Berhalter is he didn't have enough MLS players on the field. All right, so let that be a lesson to you. All of these European-based players out there, for all you Euro snubs out there, were out there on the field, and they laid one of the biggest eggs we have seen in a long time when it comes from when it comes to the U.S. men's national team. But all is not lost. As a matter of fact, this is glass. I'm still glass half full. They got this out of their system, and they found a way to ultimately win the game and put themselves, like I said, into another final on Sunday. But they're going to have to sort out what happened. They can't just sweep it under the rug. And I think that there will probably be some come to Jesus types of meetings and moments here in the next few days between Greg Berhalter and this team to try to figure out. Just try. They might not, but try to figure out why they, to Mossy's point, lacked any type of energy and, like I've said, urgency and certainly ruthlessness when it comes to going forward and doing things in the attack. Lots of possession, but a lot of just going back, a lot of slow play. I just found myself, and look, I'm not the fleetest of foot. I certainly wasn't the quickest player, but I just found myself constantly saying, quicker, 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 quicker. And that just didn't show up. So I think all in all, while the result ultimately was good, this was a resounding disappointment of a game. And I don't want to speak for everybody, but I would hope that we say, all right, well, let's hope that that is not something that is tolling the bell, that that is not something that is showing what is to come or showing up the problems that they have and that they can, you know, get past this very quickly. Mossy, anything to say before we go?
A couple of programming notes. Tomorrow, we've got England-Brazil friendly at Wembley live on Fox. Then Tuesday, we now know our Euro qualifying playoff match. It'll be Wales-Poland live on FS1. We'll be back. Our next pod will be on Monday. In addition to breaking down the U.S.-Mexico Nations League game, we'll talk about the U.S.'s Olympic groups, men's and women's. We found out the men are going to have to contend with host France. The women are going to have to contend with Germany and Australia. So lots to dig into there.
Yeah, tomorrow's going to be fun with England, Brazil. And for those that have been listening, you'll know. And if you haven't, Mossy, I have never seen a more negative and cynical Mossy when it comes to this version of Brazil. So you know that they're definitely beating England in Wembley tomorrow. So tune in for that. That's gonna be fun. Thank you for joining us here today, live on Spaces, to talk about this game and other things out there. And thank you to everybody that that does watch and listen to the State of the Union podcast, reviewing and downloading and subscribing and doing all the different things that you do. As Mossy said, we'll be back next week with more shows. I hope everybody has a wonderful, wonderful weekend of soccer, whether you're watching it or playing it. And we will talk again next week. And until then, and as always, my friends, size the day.